So my name is Joe Balabas. I'm with the San Mateo County Health System in San Mateo County, California. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a pilot project that we undertook in San Mateo County to really look at our bilingual staff as a viable language assistance resource in providing language assistance services to our limited English proficient clients in San Mateo. Just a word of note, I know we're called the San Mateo County Health System, but we are a county health department. We just changed our name because we recently merged with our county medical center, so now we're referred to as a system and not just a health department, but we still offer the same services as traditional county health department. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So this is just a brief overview of what I'm going to be talking about today. I'll quickly give you some demographic information about our county, specifically around our language groups and our language needs. And I'll really get into the meat and potatoes of my presentation, which is really about this pilot project that I coordinated, and talking about how we looked at bilingual staff as a language assistance resource, and then talk about some of the challenges, the key findings, and the lessons learned along the way. So San Mateo County is located in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're bordered to the north by the city and county of San Francisco, and to the south by the counties of Santa Clara and Santa Cruz counties. We have about 22 cities and towns in our county, and those are those areas listed in purple. So that's where our counties, or that's where our residents live. We're a pretty diverse county in terms of race, ethnicity, and language. We have about 712,000 people in our county, and about 42% of our county speaks a language other than English at home. So meeting the needs of our residents in terms of language is a huge priority for our county health department. Of the people who speak 42% of the 42% who speak a language other than English at home, they speak more than 30 languages in our county. And our health system has really identified 5 priority languages based on the volume of limited English proficient clients that we see, or LEP clients that we see and serve. And those 5 languages are Spanish, Chinese, which includes Cantonese and Mandarin, Tagalog, which is the language of the Philippines, Russian, and Tongan. And what you see there on the right is a sign that we developed to notify our clients and our public of their right to request free interpretation services that we've translated into 14 of the most common languages served in our county health department. As an institution, we passed institutional policies that basically state that all clients that we serve have the right to request free interpretation services. So that's a policy that we prioritized and we saw as a commitment in our agency. We passed that back in October of 2008. And it was really consistent, and this is the policy that I mentioned below. It's a policy that's consistent with a couple of the federal and state policies that were already in place at the time or were actually being worked on. And on the federal level, I just like to mention the federal class standards that have been around for about 10 years now, which are the culturally and linguistically appropriate services standards that are under the Office of Minority Health and the Department of Health and Human Services. And in the state of California, there was a lot of work around this new Senate bill, Senate Bill 853, which was passed in January of 2009, which really requires all health plans in the state of California to provide free language assistance to limited English proficient enrollees. So internally at the San Mateo County Health System, we have a number of language or formal language assistance resources in place in order to support the 2 policies that we have around language access. We have a central language assistance line through which our staff can access or schedule in-person interpreter services, document translation services, over the phone interpretation services, as well as access interpreter equipment that we've purchased. And these interpreter equipment can be used at community meetings or group meetings whenever our staff go out and have to facilitate those kinds of events. Our medical center operates under a different system. They have a video-based interpreter system called the Healthcare Interpreter Network, in which they purchased a number of video units which they can kind of wheel around to different doctor's offices or nursing stations and provide video-based interpreter services. And kind of informally, we've relied on the skills and talents of our bilingual staff. And when I talk about bilingual staff, I'm not really referring to staff that are specifically hired for their language skills, such as interpreters or bilingual caseworkers. I'm talking about staff that are hired on to do other functions, such as administrative support, finance, accounting, who just happen to speak another language, and because staff know that they speak that language, they often get pulled in to help with assistance and with walk-in clients or someone who calls in on the phone and has limited English proficiency, so they just grab the staff that's close by them. So kind of the issues with that kind of an approach These are kind of the main issues that were brought to light when we started looking at how our bilingual staff were being utilized. One, bilingual staff really provided assistance to their immediate program or their immediate office. There was no way for neighboring programs or units even down the hall or on the floor above or below to know who spoke which languages. There was no directory. There was no pool of people that said this particular staff person speaks this language. So really the assistance that staff person was able to provide was limited to their own office or program. Another issue is that, as I mentioned before, a lot of these staff weren't really hired to provide language assistance services. So that provision of service or those skills that they were providing weren't necessarily formally linked to their job duties or job descriptions. So they were doing something that was outside what they were hired on to do. And as a result, the time and the quality of their service wasn't being formally tracked or evaluated. They would be asked sometimes to give 5 minutes of assistance, sometimes 20 minutes of assistance. And so they had to put down whatever it is they were working on in order to provide this assistance to another staff person. So that time wasn't really formally being tracked or accounted for in their timesheets. And one thing that we realized is that also the bilingual staff in our health department may have varying levels of language proficiency. So they may be very proficient in their language, they may not be very proficient in their language, they may have taken 2 high school classes in Spanish and still be providing some assistance. So there's really varying levels of proficiency, and not many are really trained on providing formal interpretation on formal interpretation or translation skills. So the purpose of this bilingual employee pilot project that we undertook was really to look at the viability of using bilingual staff as more of an agency-wide resource, not just on a program basis. We thought about, can we use bilingual staff? Can we include them in a pool that maybe other staff can access if there's an emergency situation or if there's an immediate need? We tried to look at ways that we can formally monitor their time. Can we create codes in our time tracking systems so that they can account for language assistance provided to different offices? And we wanted to provide them with skills in basic interpretation and translation, knowing that a lot of times they're asked to interpret for other staff members or asked to review documents or translate documents. So we wanted to provide them with some basic skills in those areas. And our goals were really to strengthen and formalize the roles of bilingual staff in our health department, recognize that they provide a service to us, and we really wanted to formalize their roles and to examine ways to better utilize bilingual staff in our agency. So the pilot project was really an 8-month project. It took place between June of 2009 and February 2010, if I recall correctly. We recruited 25 bilingual staff, mostly line staff, not really supervisors or managers, from across our health department to participate. They happened to speak each of the 5 priority languages that I mentioned before, Spanish, Chinese, Tagalog, Russian, and Tongan. And these were actually staff who often participated in doing, or who often responded to requests from other staff members. So these are people who are generally very proficient and generally commonly requested to provide some sort of language assistance. So they're very willing to participate on a voluntary basis on this pilot project. We hosted a 2-day training on which we provided basic interpretation skills and basic cultural competence training. We utilized a curriculum that's called Bridging the Gap. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that curriculum. It's an interpreter training curriculum that was developed by the Cross-Cultural Healthcare Program in Seattle, Washington. It's a 40-hour curriculum, but we truncated it to 20 hours because we weren't training them to be full-on interpreters. And after they completed the training, we placed them on an interpreter list that was distributed and made available to all health system staff for them to access. And we formally tracked their time, or we formally asked them to track their time on their timesheets and in tracking logs. We actually created on our electronic timekeeping system a test code or something that they can actually say, enter the code and say that I provided 2 hours of assistance this week for this pilot project. This is just a picture from our training that we held, which was a 2-day training. We hired an interpreter trainer from a contract agency to come in and provide formal interpretation and translation techniques. And after they completed the training, we actually developed these stickers here on the bottom that they could actually put on their ID badges so that other staff would be able to identify that they're a trained basic interpreter and they speak one of these languages. As I mentioned before, we included them in an interpreter pool or a list of interpreters that any members of our health system could access. We included their names, which language they spoke, which building they were located in. We have about 10 different buildings across the county, so we kind of limited what programs that they can provide services to. They could obviously provide services to people in their same building, but we're not going to make you drive 20 miles just to provide services to somebody else. And we also included the dates that they would be in their office or out of their office so that staff would know when they would be available. So at the end of the 8 months, we tallied up everybody's time that they spent providing language assistance services, and the 25 participants provided over 105 total hours of language assistance. We were able to break down the time by how much of their time were spent providing interpretation and how much of it was spent doing document translation review or document or direct document translation. And so it's about an equal distribution of hours spent providing interpretation services and translation services. Now the interesting thing here, when I mentioned that most requests were for immediate translation or translation review, was that very early on in the pilot project, there wasn't really a lot of demand on this on these bilingual staff. Because they were limited to providing only immediate assistance, a lot of our staff were already trained on how to access our more formal services with in-person interpretation and document translation. So the timing of it was a little bit strange for them because they were just, you know, this new program was just instituted and all of a sudden there's this pilot project going on. So they weren't really using the services that that frequently at the beginning of the pilot project. However, something happened in October of 2009 that changed everything, and that was H1N1. So in our county, when H1N1 happened, there was a lot of immediate need for document translation, for translation review, for immediate on-site interpretation, especially when it came time to start hosting mass vaccination clinics. We needed more immediate in-person language assistance support at our vaccination clinics, and they really saw the interpreters that were trained through this program as a viable resource to provide assistance with those efforts. I'm not going to give you the specifics about our evaluation process. All I'll say is that we did a number of satisfaction surveys with the staff who requested services, some key informant interviews, and some focus groups with our participants, and asked what their general experiences were. And for the service recipients or for the staff who actually requested services from our bilingual employees, they were very satisfied with the quality of services that they got. They thought that the process was very easy. For a lot of them, it raised the awareness of people working in other offices next door to them. I think a hidden benefit was that it got people thinking outside of their silos. So for those of you who work in local public health departments, we tend to be very siloed with whatever program we're working on, whether it's HIV/AIDS or mental health or public health nursing, and we kind of don't really see the world outside of those silos. And this was really a way for our staff to recognize the contributions of people who work in other programs and really think of things outside of their box or boxes. And for our participants, they had a very positive experience with this overall as well. They felt very valued in providing these services, but they really placed restrictions on how they should be requested in the future. And they said that there should be a clear and limited time commitment, maximum time commitment per week for them to provide these services. And they said 2 hours a week was good enough for them, because anything more than that, they're dropping whatever work that they had to work on. Their supervisors would kind of question why they were leaving for so long to provide services. So there has to be a really clear time commitment stated. And of course, the support from their supervisors and managers were very imperative. We had clear discussions with managers before the start of this program, and they were all very supportive of it. So they were open to having their employees work outside of their office to provide immediate language assistance, especially when H1N1 rolled around. So basically, what were our lessons learned? And I think this is where the tie-in comes back to this section, which is about policy development, because all of these lessons have a policy impact institutionally within our agency and maybe within your agencies as well. We realize that bilingual staff can be used as a viable language assistance resource for a local health department, but you have to put systems in place to protect their time and to protect your clients as well. There should be a formal tracking system put in place so that you're not overutilizing their services and they're not spending too much of their time outside of their normal job functions. And in some way, that language assistance that they're going to be provided should be built into their job description so that that can be formally evaluated and formally recognized. And you really have to put some protections on the amount of time they're spent doing that. Language assistance does require very strong language and grammar skills, and that's something that our bilingual employees learned right off the bat, is that when it comes time to really working with clients and talking to them about H1N1 vaccines, I mean, that requires a very strong, very technical set of language and grammar skills. Therefore, you can't just select staff who don't have that level of proficiency to help provide you with language assistance. So what we need to have in place in our county and in our health department is some sort of testing procedure in order to, some standardized testing procedure to see how proficient employees are with their particular language. And if we are going to make a commitment to utilizing bilingual staff as a language assistance resource, then we should, as a county, be responsible to providing language skills trainings for them, ongoing language skills trainings for them. And finally, bilingual staff should be really used in conjunction with existing language assistance resources. For our county, there is just no way bilingual staff can address all the language needs by themselves and on a part-time basis. They should really just be used for short-term immediate situations. Having other systems in place for in-person interpretation is very valuable, and I can't expect our bilingual staff to sit in with a behavioral health therapist and go over a mental health session or group session on addiction, but something as immediate as filling out a registration form or helping limited English proficient clients out at a clinic is definitely something that's very appropriate. And that's the end of my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you. Right, so the question was, what did we have in place before using this pilot project? Was there a language assistance services program in place? And did we do basically like a cost effectiveness study seeing whether or not this actually saved us money? Two really good questions, and they're both very long answers. I'll try to answer the first one very quickly. We do have a formal system in place. We launched our formal language assistance services program back in July of 2008, and that's more of a centralized system that all health system staff can access. Prior to that, we've been contracting out with interpreters for many years, but those contracts were done on an individual program basis. So behavioral health had their contracts with their set of interpreters. Family health, our public health nurses had their interpreter contracts with another set of interpreters in another agency. So everyone was doing it in a siloed approach in their own way. And finally, in July of 2008, our director said, enough is enough. Let's just put this all under one office. Let's have one office manage the program, manage all those services, so that we're not having various levels of quality and also various rates that we're paying the different interpreter agencies. So that's the answer to your first question. The second question is very complicated. And I'll have to talk to you a little bit about that afterwards, because we do have a salary differential program in San Mateo County where we pay bilingual employees who have a certain caseload or who provide language assistance for a certain percentage of their time. And we could track that amount of money that we spend on that program and compare it to the amount of money that we spent providing interpreter services. And that's kind of a future next steps kind of thing to see how much money we're actually spending on language assistance and where we could be more efficient with our or more effective with our use of resources. But I think the point of this pilot wasn't really to look at that. It was really to look at what are the best ways and the resources that we have to best serve our limited English proficient clients, more from a quality of care standpoint, not so much as a cost standpoint, but obviously cost is going to be a big factor for us to look at down the road. But that's a next step for this particular project. So the question is the total amount of time it took to actually planning process. I started with the department, I think, back in December of 2008, and this was my project to start with in terms of planning it out and in terms of seeing this to fruition. So between December of 2008 and June of 2009 is when the planning process actually took place. It didn't take much to get a lot of the support from the supervisors, because this pilot project was basically blessed and got the stamp of approval by our health department chief and our health officer. So they really wanted to take a look at utilizing our bilingual staff a little bit more effectively and charged my department or my unit with carrying out this pilot project. So when the health department chief says, we're going to do this pilot project, I want you all to support this, you're pretty much not going to get a lot of, criticisms against that. So it was a top-down approach. That might not be the best way to do it all the time, but it was the most helpful for us to have.